Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Thursday, July the 24th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Another beautiful day in the Ozarks. Actually, a little chilly this morning, which is kind of cool for having cool, pun intended, for July. But it's usually a little more on the warm side. Beautiful weather. And we're delighted that you've chosen to join us. We are honored, privileged, and blessed by the fact that you're lending your ears to our conversation. And as you lend your ears to our conversation, you take the energy of first century Aramaic forgiveness one more step, one more strengthening of that energy on planet Earth as we move toward critical mass. You know, critical mass in physics is that principle where you can have a substance and you start adding a second substance to the primary substance and nothing happens. You add one drop, nothing happens. Two drops, 10 drops, 20 drops, 50 drops. Nothing happens. All of a sudden, you add the 51st drop and the whole substance changes. Critical mass. In the ancient Aramaic, it was spoken as a parable in that physics language. Unfortunately, it does come through the Greek fairly clearly there. And it says, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. I think we can safely assume that the speaker of those words was not talking about bread. But he was talking about human life and humanity. In a world that is just about void of human life, those who choose to step up to the plate and actually function as human beings, that is, face every hostility, fear, grief, rage, pain, drama, and trauma in them, and engage in the process of forgiveness. Now, that does not mean letting everybody else or somebody else or anybody else or yourself off the hook because you're in that turmoil or pain, but rather, it's how you go inside yourself and remove that from your structure. If we never remove those energies from our structures, what happens is that we think we see what's happening in the world. We think there's a person out there, the person hits our eye, and snap, we've got a picture that shows up in our brain of that person. But nothing could be further from the truth. There are many things that happen between the light that enters the eye and the picture that shows up in the brain. Some of those things are that there are filters. In order to see something in your mind, you have to have a goal to see it. There has to be a goal somehow involved. And the quality of that goal determines the quality of the perception that you will have. The goals limit information available. Sure, that comes to mind is impacted greatly by your goals. The content of your mind, the past information stored in your mind, injects silently, this limitation of goals and the silent injection of content is invisible. I mean, we really do look in our brains and say, I'm seeing what's happening out there. Our genetics inject information silently. And if you really want the highest and best perception possible, you've got to take into consideration each factor that creates your perception and recognize that perception is only as good as its weakest link. If we go back 2,000 years ago, we hear the man named Yeshua saying, I is the lamp of the soul. And you say, what does that mean? Here's what it says. That's the Greek trying to figure out what the Aramaic words meant. What it says in Aramaic is, perception is the guide for your earthly life. In other words, the output of your mind is meant to take you through this unknown world. And I like to use an example of, if you've ever been in Mammoth Cave, absolutely huge, unbelievably large cavern. Imagine that we have a bag with $1 million worth of diamonds in it, a clear plastic bag. We put it on the wall of the cave, and we tell you it's out in open sight. All you have to do is find it and get out of the cave alive. We send you in the cave with a pen light. The pen light is the light for your journey through the cave. But you can only see the tiniest part of the cave at a time. And imagine that you stand still and you stand for hours scanning the cave. And finally you see the sparkle of the diamonds reflected. And you go running off to get your bag with $1 million worth of diamonds. And don't use the light to show you the 30-foot pit that's in front of you. Getting out of the cave with the diamonds alive, are you? Cancel the thought, but... Well, perception is similar to a pen light in Mammoth Cave. There's some interesting Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of information that goes into forming your perception, your pen light, is 9 bits. 9 bits out of 10,000 brain cells firing, and it's been estimated, now that's what's happening inside of us. It's been estimated that in the actual world, there are as much as 20 trillion bits of information potentially available. So it's kind of like Mammoth Cave. We're in a 20 trillion bit world, 10,000 brain cells are firing, we get to see 9 bits. I go into a cave that is mammoth. There's a reason they call it that. And I shine my pen light. If I want to find the diamonds and safely get them in my hands and safely get out of the cave, I'm going to have to make sure that I'm pointing the light in the right direction at the right time. I'm going to have to make sure that it is the right quality of use of the light. The world has not taught us about all of the factors that go into formulating our perception. We think, I open my eyes, I see my brother, and in my brain is my brother. Nothing could be further from the truth. And so until you learn what the pieces are that impact your perception, and until you develop the skill and the ability to remove from those things that impact your perception, then the light for your journey through this 20 trillion bit world can tell you things that are a lie. So let's go back and hear the second half of that comment from Yeshua 2,000 years ago. The eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? What a brilliant, brilliant piece of information. If hostility or fear, which in Aramaic are darkness, are the guide you follow, how deep will your darkness become? And one of the questions we've asked thousands, tens of thousands of people over the years is, how many have ever done something you regret? And then we ask people to tell us what they were feeling when they did what they regretted. Well, I was in rage, I was in guilt, I was in grief, I was in hate, I was in vengeance, I was in anger, I was in sadness, I was in fear, I was in terror, I was in greed, I was in guilt. And hear me, 100% of the time, they are the energies that guide people's behavior when they do what they've regretted. What does that mean? It means that darkness has become their guide. Hostility and fear robs us of intelligence, and we do the things that we then regret because our intelligence is gone. Our lights are out. And if we are filled with hostility and fear from the past, from the genetics, from the generations, from our own unresolved issues in life, then every time somebody shows up that resonates any of that content, that's injected into our brain's image of them, and we see them through the contents of our minds, and our perception is darkened. Yeshua had a name for those who lived in that quality of perception, a name for those who lived in that world. And when you listen and you hear the definition that he gives to this particular class of people, then having the background information that we just gave, all of a sudden just goes, wow, is that what that meant? Holy cow! You remember the story where Yeshua is invited to the Pharisee's home for dinner. And he sits down to eat, and he doesn't wash his hands. And the Pharisee is like, oh, my God, you didn't wash your hands. And Yeshua tells him what a Pharisee is. And this isn't a particular category, you know, it's been made a category in the Jewish culture. It's not. It's anybody who lives by this definition. What does he say to the man? He says, you Pharisees, you keep clean the outside of the cup and the platter. In other words, you make sure everything is spotless in the outer world. You're in full control and nothing gets into your space that you don't want to have there, and everything is totally, completely sparkling. He says, but your inward parts are filled with hostility and fear. The Greek translations say, ravening and wickedness. It is simply hostility and fear. What he's saying is, if you're living in a pharisaical mind, if you have unresolved hostility or fear in your genes or in your experiences, then those things will inject into your guide for your earthly life their content. And you will perceive that your content is about them and they're the problem in your life. That's why we live in a culture that virtually everyone, everywhere says, you made me mad, you hurt me, you made me sad. That really upset me. They disturbed me. It's all on the outside. Because when the mind injects its pain into its brain's image of another, the guidance system now is in error and says, all that you're feeling and seeing is outside of you. Our invitation in this work is to be willing to clean up and clear up your perception so that you always get the highest and best. Nothing is injected into it that isn't accurate about your world. When you get there, life will so dramatically change if you're living in the pharisaical mind. How can you tell if you're living in the pharisaical mind? Is there anybody that can give you the look and seem to put you into pain, turmoil, hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief? If there is, you're a Pharisee. The inside of the cup and the platter is filled with what never belonged in a human structure. When we begin to give up what never belonged in a human structure, we get to reclaim our human lives. We get to literally incarnate as human beings. But you've got to be willing to look at the truth. You've got to be willing to look at the truth inside yourself. You've got to be willing to look at the truth of what's happening in your society. Yeshua specifically speaks of that in the second beatitude. The Greeks translate that beatitude as, blessed are they mourning their wrongs, for they will be comforted. Like, duh, so what? Let's go to the Aramaic, the actual original words of Yeshua, that the Greeks translated as that. And what does he say? He says that a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession. You who love truth, you who look into your errors in thought and the errors of your society, for you will be cured of mental stress. Put all those pieces together, and the genius of that understanding is just beyond comprehension. It's just so amazing. So what is the work of Yeshua? The work of Yeshua is about cleaning up the content of your pharisaical mind, the content of your genes, literally removing what never belonged from your structure. And the removal tool is called forgiveness. Notice the Greeks turned that tool backward. Forgiveness became about how you caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay. I'll let you off. I'll forgive you. Off the hook, I'll forgive you. So the tool for removal of what darkens your perception has now been turned into a tool for letting other people off the hook, because that darkened perception is yours. And so when you let people off the hook, each time you do, you literally reinforce the darkened perception and create more of it. Of course, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me, too. I'm talking about all of us. It's time for a cleanup. The word forgive in Aramaic has nothing to do with me letting you off the hook because I'm in pain or turmoil, or you letting me off the hook because you're in pain or turmoil, or you letting your spouse off the hook, or your spouse letting you off the hook, or your child letting you off the hook, or you letting your child off the hook. Nothing whatsoever to do with forgiveness. When you think forgiveness, think removal. Ah, pain and turmoil. I want to forgive. I want to remove my pain. Thank you, child, mother, sister, brother, spouse, for showing me the part of my mind that I've been hiding from myself, the part of my pharisaical mind that holds darkness. And now that I can bring that piece of darkness to the light, I get to heal. How cool is that? It's awesomely powerful when you see it happening. And we are just having a blast here at Heartland. We're in, what, I think it's day 6 of a 16-day codependency and repentance intensive, and the energy is moving monumentally. It's just awesome to watch the shifts that are happening physically, mentally, emotionally with everybody that's here, the new insights that are coming, the new teaching. It's such a privilege to get to engage at this level in people's questions, because the answers that come are just so awesome. And so we're here to share the best of our understanding of how these tools work with you, and to invite you to share them with someone else, to become part of the support team for taking this to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. How can you do that? Well, you know, the show. You can go to the website at when we finish the show, right-click on the MP3 and download it to your computer. Put it on a CD. Put it on a thumbnail. Give it to 1,000 people. Attach it. Send it out in your email. Say, hey, listen to this. See if this makes sense to you. Send it out with a note that says, this guy's crazy. Listen to what he says. Or, hey, this makes a whole lot of sense. Give it a shot. See what you get out of it. If everybody that's listening to the show would send it out to their whole mailing list, the wave of energy and shift on the planet would be monumental. So we invite you to support us by doing that. Of course, there are lots of other ways to support it. We have Heartland here, and We are working toward developing our support team for this next 2 years. And so if you are interested in taking some time and doing another level of work, we do a work support program that's part of the Heartland Project, and people who are on the support team get to spend 2 years here with no need for money. It's a total work support program. There are work projects to be done, you know, anything you can imagine that needs to be done on 17 acres with 15 buildings in the Ozarks. That's part of it. It might be swinging a paintbrush or a hammer. It might be working in the office. It might be doing publicity. And the most important component is it includes the tools for healing and the practice of working with those healing tools with others. And so if that's a way that you might want to support, great, then come and support us. If you'd like to participate in intensive, we've got three more intensives happening. The 22nd of this month, we start a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again. Then we do a 9-day teacher training. When that's complete, we'll do a 16-day Laws of Living. So if you're ready to take your work to the next level, a way to support us is come and do an intensive. If you feel like this is, if this is something that's impacted your life and improved the quality of your life, I'd invite you, and this is a topic I don't usually bring up. You know, Lady Jane, who used to bring this up every month when she sent us a tithe check, would call in every month and share with us. Unfortunately, bless her heart, Lady Jane has passed from her body. But she used to call us once a month and just remind everybody of the importance of supporting what supports you. And so if this is something that's impacted your life and you're in a position to assist us, basically all of the resources that we have beyond a relatively minimalist lifestyle, everything goes to how do we do the next project? How do we take it to the next group of people? And our commitment ultimately is to take this to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. So if you'd like to support us, you can go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and there's a donate button. Make a donation. There are a couple of people who are making a recurring monthly donation. They've just got it set up that it's automatic. If you'd like to help us to get this out on a planetary scale, then that's another way to support us. Start a support group. If you don't have a support group, if you've been listening to the show for long, you hear the amazing results that happen when a group of people gets together to work with these tools. Start your own support group. If you're in some remote place where there's nobody else, start showing the DVD to one person, two people, three people, four people, the Ladies Club, the Kiwanis Club. You know, gather people and share it. Start taking it into your jail. Start taking it into your local kindergarten. And as you teach it, you will learn it. And our commitment, our goal is every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And we're delighted that you're here listening and part of that process. Jeannie, do we have Dr. Tim with us today?
We do. And it's actually day seven already. And it's the third day of our juice fast. So,
cool.
Dr. Tim is on.
How are you, young man?
I'm doing beautifully well, thank you. I enjoyed the intro. And glad to hear that things are rocking along there at Heartland and people are enjoying a juice fast. I assume they're enjoying it. I know I always have when I've been there.
It's the energy is very exciting and excited. There's just a lot moving already. And so looking forward to seeing where it goes from here. So what's it going on in your world? Anything on your mind in particular today?
Well, the theme, primarily so far today, is old energies locked in bodies, and how most people have no concept that the mental, emotional energies are so strongly tied to the physical experience. And, you know, I know you talk about it from time to time on the show. We haven't really talked about the vitality meter in a long time, but my last appointment last night, one of the primary teachings that happened was to reinforce for this person who came in a deep crisis that she didn't really need to figure this out. It made very good sense why she was experiencing the symptoms and the disorientation she was feeling, and that's because she's really been doing a lot of work. And she had recently reached a very, very much for her, heightened sense of vitality. And not too long after that, she created a situation in her life for which she could not seem to come up with any kind of a logical answer. And so she would spend more and more time researching data and getting excited, getting frustrated, getting scared, until she had worked herself into a frothy lather. And she showed up in my office last night, and she insisted on spending the first 15 or 20 minutes trying to tell me all about the details and why it was happening and what was wrong. And I finally just asked her to say...
Who was the problem in her life, and it was somebody outside of her?
Oh, everything outside of her.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I finally, because I've known her a long time, I finally just said, okay, you can stop talking now. And it just, you know, she just burst out laughing because I'd probably been a long, long time if I've ever said that to her. And then we stepped through just a quick overview of how it makes sense that she's so confused and has all these physical symptoms, and it's because she's done so much good work. So part of it is just reframing it from this, woe is me, how could this horrible thing be happening to me? I've done all this good work, how come it isn't better? And to be able to reframe it into the perspective that, wait a minute, this is a good thing. It's definitely a result. It's like a validation that I've done a lot of good work. And so my emotional vitality level, my energy and physical vitality level, my spiritual energy and vitality level is at such a height that I can now deal with, become aware of consciously, and process out some of the energies I've carried for decades that are very constricting and painful and upsetting, and I can process through them. I don't have to deny and suppress them anymore. So that was the first step, and then the second step was about 25 minutes of just canceling goals. One after another would come up. And one of the pieces that has come to me recently is that in the reality management worksheet process, we're asked to give up our need to be right and to cancel our need to make up yet another reality out of the brain cells that have resulted in anger or fear, and to put our conscious logical mind on the shelf temporarily as we ask some higher power to help us see the hidden part of our mind. And one of the things that's come to me recently is that any effort in my mind to beat myself up, to tell myself that I'm stupid, to tell myself that I should have done this or I should have done that, I have decided to red flag those mentally as an indication that I'm still trying to figure it out. Oh, I'm so stupid, which is, okay, if I were only smarter, then I could figure this out. So every bit of negative self-talk is another level of me trying to figure it out. Every bit of beating myself up emotionally really belongs in the category of trying to figure it out. And if I'm canceling my goals and putting my conscious logical mind on the shelf temporarily and asking for help from some higher power that has a bigger, broader perspective, I need to stop beating myself up, at least temporarily. I can always go back to it later if I find it useful. Not likely, but I might be able to find it useful.
Right.
And so we were doing that, and it was quite a journey. However, at the end of 25 minutes of catching herself beating herself up and canceling her need to be right and asking for assistance to see it differently. She left here in a very, very, very different state than when she came in. So maybe you'd want to talk about the vitality meter or about your ideas related to anytime I'm beating myself up. That's an aspect of trying to figure something out.
Well, that, you know, in the Cody Penance, Amy Penance workshop, that's the number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind, if I could just figure this out. And what it does, and you look at our culture, which is so cerebral, and what that pseudo-solution has us become is a non-human thinking. And so the wheels run and run and run and run, but, you know, how's that real song go? The wheels of the bus go round and round. The wheels of the mind go round and round, and it goes nowhere except back to the same place. I think there's a book about that. I think they call it, Why Am I Doing This to Myself Again? And, you know, when I start to
why,
see...
I thought it was, Why Are They Doing This to Me Again?
Yeah, there you go. But it's so amazing the way the structure convinces itself that the problem's outside. And of course, one of my favorite questions, you've heard me ask it 1,000 times, is, if they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? Why am I in turmoil? It's because I'm the one with the problem. Well, yeah, but look, they have a problem. It's like, I agree with you. You know something? They have a problem. They have a huge problem. They have the biggest problem in the world. But their problem's none of my business. If I'm in turmoil, my business is my problem. I just start having a conversation about me and start delving into the part of my mind that is formulating the perception that somebody else is causing my pain or my turmoil. And I need to start to admit how I show up in the world. And, you know, people block how they show up themselves, and they've always got a justification for how it's about everybody else. So, you know, we have people that show up as bullies, and they have to control, and they want to run the show. We have people who show up as complaint, you know, time after time after time. Doesn't matter what the circumstance is, you know, they show up as a complaint. They go into a relationship with their spouse, and they complain. They go into a relationship with their children, and they complain. And they go into a relationship at work, and they complain. You know, and until one recognizes, ooh, maybe I have a pattern of showing up as a complaint, and maybe I could forgive that pattern, and instead of being a non-human cerebral, a non-human thinking, I could become a human. I could function, whatever they're doing, as the active presence of love. And maybe I could present myself, maybe I could show up as a human blessing instead of a non-human complaining or a non-human bullying or a non-human, you know, whatever the game is. And so cerebral process and all of the factors until we, as I say, understand those factors that go into perception and really step in and do it. And it was one of the people in the workshop yesterday was pointing out in terms of the vitality meter, just how important a community is and how they've had the experience of, you know, working on an issue, and all of a sudden the healing came when they were part of an intensive, and there was a group of people who were there all heading in the same direction, all pulling in the same direction, all holding the space for each other and upping the vitality level. And, of course, when the vitality level comes up, what goes up in somebody's face? Whatever's hidden in the structure. And so to take responsibility for that and shift into, and there's, you know, as you've said so often, and I as well, the importance of a support group. You know, that African proverb, if you want to go quickly, go alone. And it's interesting how people will isolate themselves. And one of the reasons I think people isolate themselves is because if I isolate myself, then nobody can touch the insanity in my mind, and I won't have to feel it. They then hallucinate all kinds of reasons to experience the insanity. Instead of coming out into the world, instead of expressing and interacting, where there are going to be challenges, but the strengths develop so powerfully when we trust enough to step into the arena and really go for it. So it's just an amazing process to watch how the mind can trick us. It's just monumental. And of course, that's why I started the show talking about what are the factors that go into creating the perceptual output of the mind. What are the factors that go into creating the light for your earthly life? You get a 9-bit window on the world. It's what shows up in your conscious perception. Thing isn't fueled by love. Every instant where it's not fueled by love, you're in trouble mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. Because when we're not fueled by love, the fuel we're pouring into the structure on all levels is not love. And that means that it's creating disease processes, which of course leads to all the beating up of self and all the stuff that goes on. So great example of exactly that point of perception, and that it really comes down, the work of Yeshua really comes down to, at least in the initial phases, the core of cleaning up your own perceptual apparatus. Then there's another beatitude that speaks of how to become known as the offspring of love. And what it says is, those who work effectively through service to produce the peace and understanding under and in accord with love's will, they will be called the children of love. And, you know, people can become so self-centered and so wrapped around themselves in that intellect, in that run, 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 the wheels of the bus going round and round, that they don't even comprehend that one of the ways to bring love through their structure and experience it is through service to others. And as they bring it forward and through service to others offer that, they get to receive it and literally become, in the ancient Aramaic sense, literally the offspring of love, or what the Greeks translated as the children of God. It's pretty cool. So go right down where you live. Do you live as love or don't you? You know, nothing to do with theology, nothing to do with religion, nothing to do with church. Do you live as love or don't you? And if you don't, then at least start to admit to yourself that you don't have a human life. Because a human life is the active presence of love. And when I don't have love active in my mind, I'm in trouble. And it's amazing how many people, you know, over the years I've had similar conversations to that with, and they're like, I don't even know what you're talking about, this love stuff. What do you mean? The experience of the active presence of love in the physiology is so far removed. You know, we all started out there. All you have to do is hold a newborn child to know where you started. You started in the same place as the newborn. Then when the genes, when the contents of the body-mind unit start garbage into perception, into the mind, EGO, good anacronym for ego, edging God or love out, EGO, E-G-O-E-L-O, removing the awareness of our human lives. And the beauty of doing one's work, instead of showing up as a problem, instead of showing up as a complaint, always having something to whine about or something to bully about or something to push about, the beauty is you start to show up in your own physiology as this sweetness, this compassion, this awesome creature called love. How different would the world be? How different would my world be, your world be, anybody who's listening, how different would our world be if tomorrow morning everybody in your world, my world, woke up and experienced in their physiology the delight of every cell being powered by the activity of love? how different would our interactions be? Now, of course, the average person's mind's going to go, yeah, boy, if Charlie, yeah, if my father, yeah, if my mother, if. It's like, no, this isn't about anybody else. What if you showed up tomorrow? Totally, completely. What if I showed up? What if all of us showed up as the active presence of love instead of the silly games we've been playing? How different would our culture be? How different would our world be? Could anybody be sick? Could anybody be hungry? Could anybody go without shoes? The whole game on planet Earth would change. Because the truth is, there is so much abundance that there's enough for everybody to have it all. And that's not going to happen, unfortunately, until we realize who we are and start to create our lives out of who we are, this compassionate, sweet presence of love that we're designed to be. Thoughts, Dr. Tim?
Well, just full agreement. It's, you know, I'm playing with different synonyms for that word love, since it's just a word, and as we're using it, we're talking about the capital L form of love, which is the creative energy. It's what's been called God. It's what's been called all there is. And as I experience it, when I'm in what I would consider that mode, one of the primary common English words that helps describe it for me is acceptance. It's a willingness to accept whatever's happening in the moment, an openness and acceptance. And so it's come to me as one of the guiding tools for my personal experience to use that word synonymously with this word love we're using. And when I'm in that mode, I kind of influenced probably by the Way of Mastery, where they talk about, you know, there is either love or fear, as it says in Course in Miracles, and you're either in acceptance or resistance. You're either in love or judgment. You're in allowance or you're in rejection. So that's what I would add to what you just said, that from the practical perspective, when you're talking about for me to be in that energy of the human life, I need to be experiencing myself as willing to accept whatever's happening, catch myself judging and canceling my judgment, and just reminding myself that the old conditioning that I had for probably 45 years of my life that said, if the life doesn't show you or give you what you want, there's a problem. So get angry and be in resistance and scream and yell and holler and stomp your feet. And so I catch myself when I have that resistance or that anger come up, and I try to move to acceptance. And what I find more and more often is, as I do that, what I would previously have called miraculous things occur. So that would be my offering.
You remind me of that that song that was out several years ago, you can't always get what you want, but you always get what you need. Life gives it to you. And on that word acceptance, I know that sometimes I think even that can be misinterpreted and misunderstood, because we'll have people who will do aberrant behaviors and just say, well, you know, you just have to accept everything. And you know, for me, maybe it means it's different for you, but for me it doesn't mean that I need to accept someone's aberrant behavior in my space and go, oh, well, they puked on me, so I just accept it. But if I have a response in me and I can accept that response, if I can see that response, and if there is hostility or fear, and clean it up, then I can stand in a place of power that I can say to somebody, and you know what? That behavior is not going to keep happening in this space. We're going to do something different. Where does that fit for you?
Well, I would absolutely agree with what you're saying, and it's not so much accepting that what other people do that is aberrant. It's accepting that I'm creating what I'm feeling. And if I have an unpleasant, unhappy, sad, or scared response to something that's happening, I'm creating that. And if I move from there into the breath work and restoring my awareness to that true nature as love, and I don't like what I'm feeling, I can choose to create a different internal response and feeling. And then from there, I have much higher, clearer vision about how to respond to this aberrant behavior, how to respond lovingly and still being respectful or assertive. My favorite definition for assertive is, an assertive communication is one that effectively gets the point across to everybody around that I respect myself and I respect others. And if there's an aberrant behavior happening in my space, it's not very respectful of me to stay there and not mention it and not offer support in someone to correct it, and then remove myself from that space if they won't change, if they won't correct it. You know, Guy Finley talks about it and says, please don't use anything in this work to support yourself staying in an abusive situation or an abusive relationship. You're not responsible to change other people. That's one of the eight great false responsibilities, thinking that it's my job to make other people happy or my job to change them. He says, if I effectively communicate to somebody what I think is acceptable and they choose to keep doing what I find aberrant or unacceptable, then I'm not responsible for what they put themselves through when I leave. And I encourage myself to leave, to be respectful to me as well as others.
And, of course, that leaving can also be another excuse that the mind can use to avoid dealing with itself. Because oftentimes what I've seen people do is they have internal genetics or content of the mind that inject abuse into their perception of another, and it's a total hallucination. So we also have to be careful there that I'm in the space of connected love before I start to try to pretend that something out there is the cause of what's happening inside of me. There's definitely a fine line. And Yeshua talks about, you know, the gate is narrow. It's a fine line, and it takes time to build the brain cells for that fine line.
Well, and as you said, the primary thing is I need to restore myself to that state of acceptance or love or human life, even in the face of this aberrant behavior, before I'll know clearly what steps to take so that I don't become a doormat for somebody else and so that I don't just run away from a situation blaming somebody else for what I'm feeling.
Right. Awesome. Well, Jeannie tells me, she just texted me and said we have a caller. Let's check in with our caller and see what they have to say.
Awesome. It's area code 541. You're on the air. Who do we have and where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Julie from Ashland, Oregon.
Hey,
hi. Wow, what a great discussion today. So many.
This is awesome. Look how early you called into the show today, Julie. You didn't leave until the last minute and a half so we wouldn't be able to answer your question. How cool is that?
That is good.
Welcome. Delighted. Welcome.
Well, you answered my question the other day, or you supported me, if I even had a question. And I did do a worksheet, and I did get somewhere with it. And what you're speaking of today is adding to it. It's so amazing how immediate salvation is if we just do it, if we just do the tool, use the tool. So I'm going to say, well, two things came to mind, and I'm only remembering one, but, you know, the quotation I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly, you were speaking of abundance. I've recently, once in a while, I glimpsed that what he was talking about wasn't necessarily material abundance, although all our needs are met, but it's the abundant presence of love, the abundant presence and awareness of God in our lives and inside us. So that's pretty expansive. And from that, living from that, you know, all our needs are met. I mean, everything is taken care of from there. So it's been a long journey for me to feel that I have a bridge now where I can travel from the fear and hostility to that place of presencing love. And I didn't have a clue what that was until I came upon your work, Michael, and with your awareness, seeing that I didn't have a clue, that was great because you did support me. and I finally am able to, and I've always wondered about when you teach about the filters in the mind, and I'm finally able to feel myself, I feel a physiological shift that I can be aware of that confirms that I'm able to switch in my mind from the fear and hostility to the love's presence filter. And sometimes I don't just automatically go there, but I have that willingness, and I know it is a place to go, and so my willingness to let go of the fear and hostility, knowing that I'd rather be in the place of love, it's getting easier. Even though I do, like on that vitality scale, I come up against the next layers of healing, the symptoms of healing, and so the resistance is great. I think I've run the distance enough times that if I can't quite do it myself, I at least ask for support, like I did the other day, and there you were giving it to me. So
awesome.
It's great. Thank you.
Cool. Well, two things. One, it's interesting that you mentioned that word expansion. If you go to the Aramaic language, the word that's been translated as heaven is actually expansion. The kingdom of expansion is within. And it is expanding that awareness out of the limited nine-bit mind into the truth of what we've been given in every realm, on every level. There was a lady in the class, and it was kind of hilarious the way she presented it, but it really was a really good point that she made, and that was that, you know, you've got a dual process and she's in resistance, but she categorized herself as the most willing, resistant person she'd ever seen. and that's true of a lot of us. It's a willing resistance. It's like the mind still wants to say, no, kicking and screaming, it's all their fault, and I'm willing to keep moving toward understanding how I created this for myself. So,
willing
resistance is a cool space to be in.
I'd also like to mention trusting the support that is there and how we create it even. When we ask, we receive. And so I was in the asking of support from you and the radio show and the family of listeners. And then later, not too shortly after, a friend called who has done your work and I met in one of your workshops and supported me. So I got the immediate, you know, support to take me out of my resistance and move me ahead one step at least. So
fabulous.
That, you know, we have to acknowledge that energetic creative power we have to pull towards us what we want to happen again on a different level. I'd rather have this happening again than that.
Well, an insight I've had recently, I've been using the example of the piano that you are so expert at, and that when I hit little C on the piano, if there's a second piano, the second piano in the room, the only keys out of the hundreds of keys, and I don't remember how many keys are on a piano, but I understand there's a variety, but there are quite a few. But when I hit middle C on this piano, it creates movement in the keys of the second piano. And in the inanimate world, what happens with this law of resonance is there is movement created through resonance. In the animate world, it's different. We don't just create movement, but we create movement toward. And whatever we resonate is moving toward us, not just moving like the piano strings, but is literally moving toward us. And it applies to the good, the bad, and the ugly. Everything that we set up and everything we choose to resonate is moving toward us. And there's so many people who play the game of, oh, look, that's moving toward me. It's so terrible. But want no awareness that they're the ones causing it to move toward them, that they're the ones who are setting up the field. And so, as you've heard me say many times before, one of my favorite little tongue-in-cheek lines is, no recipient through this 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. And if you keep resonating that particular energy, that's what's going to keep moving toward you. And people are shocked, and they think it's miraculous when they shift the field, when they forgive that energy and remove it and start to vibrate something else, and all of a sudden something else moves toward them. You know, whether it's finances, a person who's in that poverty vibration is moving poverty toward them. There'll be all kinds of things that will come and take all their money. And they go, gee, I don't understand that. And then when they forgive that and shift, all of a sudden abundance moves toward them. The person who's like, oh, relationships are so traumatic and so terrible, and that's what moves toward them. The minute they go inside and forgive that, all of a sudden, wondrous, supportive, nurturing relationships show up. It's like, wow, this is like magic. It's like, no, it's called creation. It's the way it works. It's the way it's designed to work.
Wow, yes.
That's an awesome project.
Yeah, we're lucky to know it. Well, I wanted to know it. You wanted to know it. That's why we found it.
That's it, exactly. And to live without it, you know, Tim opened the show the other day in his comments about his appreciation for having the tools. And it's like, I just couldn't imagine living without this understanding, without these tools. I just couldn't fathom a life would be without the awareness and the tools. It's just like so far out of possibility to imagine that. So, and we're just about out of time, so I will say thank you for your call and your input, and I'm delighted that support showed up for you, moved toward you, and I support that continuing. And, of course, for everyone who's with us, we invite you to bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Share the tools with somebody. If you're ready to convert to the next level, get on the website, www.whyagain.org. Look at the schedule. Look at the Heartland Intensive schedule. Set the time up. Come and join us. We'd be delighted to have you with us. And
thank you.
If you can, the best you get of the eternal life. Blessings. Go for it, Jesus.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.